A Family That Flies Together, Sticks Together, Chapter 4. Hey, Dads, have you seen... Oh, gross. Have you seen my Kindle? Chris comes bustling through the living room, checklist in hand. Nikki is sitting in the cradle of Joe's arms, his back against Joe's chest as Joe reads to him. It's Nikki's off-season goal to start learning Arabic. Joe thinks he's mad, but it melts him every time Nikki doggedly tries to copy his pronunciation. So, he's enabling. They'd been swept in round two of the playoffs that season. It's neither the best nor worst outcome. It's near impossible to win back-to-back championships anyway. Usually, Nikki would start the off-season with a good sulk, but he's forgotten it for Chris's sake, as with many of his actions that season. Concerned with Chris taking the loss badly, Nikki has set a household example of not dwelling on it. He needn't have worried so much. Chris is a far cry from the nervous wreck that had first moved in with them, unable to be in the same room without stammering. By the time the press had fixated on the dad's narrative with Joe and Nikki, Chris had grown comfortable enough to lean into it ironically. Joe knows that Nikki secretly loves it, if only as proof of his and Chris's growth together. And Joe's just glad to see the kid joke around. Predictably, it had become less ironic and more of a habit, and now he and Nikki have the unfortunate reflex of responding to the title. "You're what, sorry?" Nikki asks, getting up to help look. "It's the flat muggle thing that holds lots of books," Chris says, and then cheers as Nikki finds it under a couch cushion. "I didn't realize you used this," Nikki says, curious. "Oh, it's actually Caitlin's," Chris says. "Stop waggling your eyebrows, Joe. It's not like that." "Not like what?" Joe asks, innocent as ever. Chris sighs. "Kat and I are just friends," he says. And Joe smiles and leans back, arms behind his head. "You know, Chris," he says, "Nikki and I were once just friends, too." "Leave him be," Nikki chides, and then turns to Chris. "Is that everything?" "I think so," Chris says, checking his list again. "You'll just have to visit if there's anything left over," Nikki says, and Chris grins at him. "Missing me already?" he asks, and then his eyes widen as he takes in Nikki's face. "Oh, Nikki, I'll visit regardless, and I'm still going to be on the same team, unless they trade me." "Don't worry, you can't get away that easily," Joe says, standing up. "Not with your performance this season." "Yes," Nikki says, nodding. "Chris, we're so proud of you." "Oh, Jesus," Chris says, looking between them. "Please, no crying. It'll make my face swell, and I'll get fat comments all summer." "All right," Joe says, laughing. "Get out of here, then." Chris is spending the off-season in Taiwan with family, and he promises to bring them both souvenirs when he returns. Most of his stuff has already been shipped off, so they just see him out the door with his backpack and one suitcase. He doesn't trip over anything this time, just turns and hugs them both at once, crushingly tight. "Thank you," he says, as he's said many times before, "for getting me through my first year." "Some might say we made it worse," Joe says, and Chris laughs, stepping back. "Definitely," he says, and walks away from them, down the front path. He turns back at the gate and raises a hand. "Have a good summer, Dads." They wave until he apparates, and then both stand at the door for too long, watching the empty street. "They grow up so fast," Joe says, and Nikki laughs, a little choked. When Joe turns, Nikki's looking at him with a strange expression on his face, beyond the expected bittersweetness. "What is it?" Joe asks, and Nikki shakes his head. "Nothing," he says, and distracts Joe by kissing him. "I'm just happy." The next year, in Joe and Nikki's fourth season together and Niall's fifth with the guard, they win their second championship. Joe actually doesn't catch the snitch, but they've been outscoring the Sirens all series. They get it done in three games, the Chaser squad hitting personal bests and then breaking them. Niall, June, and Olivia terrorizing the keeper until Hughes catches the snitch just to end the Sirens' misery. They descend to the ground in a messy tangle, June and Olivia smacking kisses on Niall's cheeks as the team envelops them. The chasers, from each twine, find each other instinctual, and Niall thinks her face might break from smiling so much. It's a rare way to win, and she's always struggled with how futile it can feel to have a snitch catch wipe away all their hard work. But as her fellow chasers dance around her, all inaudible but still knowing what each other are saying, she forcefully shoves that anxiety aside. They'd won this game for the team. They'd won. Joe mimes bowing down to them all, and they laugh and pull him in. Niall has never envied him. At least she always shares the load. Joe squeezes next to Niall and yells, "Fucking right, Freeman! See if they don't give you the A next season, or the goddamn captaincy!" The rest of his words are lost as he grabs her, and then her squad is lifting her onto their shoulders, everyone touching and unwilling to let go. From her vantage point, Niall sees Andy standing next to Nikki watching them all. Niall catches her eye, and despite the uproar all around them, Niall feels the quiet clarity of Andy's nod and the smile that comes with it. There's little doubt now that they are truly in the golden age of the guard. Reporters are always quick to note the all-star roster or the living legend that spent a decade rebuilding the team. But it's more than that. As the stadium starts singing for them, Niall looks around and sees a family, a raucous, ragtag bunch of nutters she's dedicated everything to, a family she has laughed with and cried with and trusted her life with, who she has bled for and who have bled for her. When the team gesture as one for her to lift the trophy first, she kisses the medal and raises it high above her head. It's perfect. Everything is perfect. That summer, Joe finally takes Nikki home with him. Nikki's met Joe's family plenty over four seasons together, but it's always been brief and Quidditch-related. It thrills Joe to bring Nikki home properly and have everyone he loves under the same familiar roof. Nikki, however, is oddly skittish about it, even though he smiles at Joe's excitement and assures Joe he's looking forward to it. "Are you still nervous around them?" Joe asks as they're packing. "Am I ever not supposed to be nervous around Aisha?" Nikki asks, making his shirts fold neatly into a suitcase before refolding them a different way. "She's a lawyer. That's just how she talks," Joe says, trying to make his suitcase zip itself. Even magic is struggling against his overpacking. "She still loves you." Nikki gives him a skeptical look before coming over to repack Joe's suitcase. "Besides," Joe says, "I have too many sisters. You don't need all of them." Nikki laughs, but he still looks tense. Joe understands. Immediate family aside, every second cousin, distant neighbor, and long-lost friend is asking to drop by. Most of the time, Joe loves how his summers are like one giant dinner party with an endless parade of loved ones to catch up with. But it takes a lot of energy and will be doubly hard on Nikki, not knowing anyone, when everyone wants to get to know him. Joe will have to get his mother to put her foot down. The Alcazanis' constant presence in Joe's life is highlighted by the Genovese's lack thereof in Nikki's. Joe is flummoxed by it. His family drives him up the wall, but he always misses them. Nikki just shrugs and says he prefers the distance, and then doesn't say much else. Joe doesn't push him, just holds him a little tighter and thinks, "You have me." He has little doubt that "me" will become "us" when Nikki comes home with him. He just hopes Nikki will feel that before the Alcazanis scare him off. It'll be a close call. "I'm taking Nikki to the Muggle Medina," Aisha announces one weekend. Joe watches Nikki's head pop up from where he's standing in the kitchen, helping Mariam with breakfast. After the first few days, Mariam had given up on shooing Nikki out of helping her. Nikki's discomfort at being waited upon is palpable, and he jumps up every time he sees an opening. It does give Mariam many opportunities to lament at how spoilt Joe is, which is a lie. Nikki is simply an overachiever. He's kept up his Arabic lessons from last summer, but a season is not the easiest time to learn any language, let alone how fast Joe's sisters speak. They'll use French or English for Nikki's sake, but when a sister smackdown is about to happen, it's in Arabic. This leads to Nikki going a little bobble-headed, looking up every time he hears his name. Zara pouts. I was going to take him to the Medina, she says, just as Amira says. I already took him. Both Aisha and Zara gasp, as if Amira is casually admitted to grand larcening. Amira doesn't even look up from her book. Joe grins, leaning back on his chair between them all. He's always known it's the quiet ones to watch out for. He can go again, Mariam says, waving her wand so breakfast lands neatly across the table and starts serving itself. It's a big place, girls. That's not the point, Zara says, and Joe puts an arm around Nikki as he takes a seat, still trying to follow the conversation. Aisha's trying to get you alone, he says into Nikki's ear as his sisters start arguing. Interrogation tactics. You up for it? Don't think I have a choice, Nikki replies, sipping his coffee. Where will you find my body? I'll save you before that, Joe says, laughing, and kisses Nikki's cheek for good measure. Hey, none of that, Aisha says, breaking away from Zara to glare at Joe. Especially tomorrow. Or do you want to let slip to Grandmama that you two are sharing a room before marriage? Hold up. No mentioning marriage at all tomorrow, Joe says to the table at large, and Zara giggles threateningly. Nikki is mouthing their words next to Joe, trying to parse them, and Joe moves hastily on, asking Aisha to pick up sketchbooks when she takes Nikki shopping. She eyes him knowingly but plays along. Maybe Joe will get Nikki back in one piece after all. Nikki and Aisha both come home looking satisfied, which is only bad because Nikki refuses to dish on their trip. It wouldn't do to betray her trust so quickly, Nikki says, a small smile on his lips as Joe humrumps and goes to complain to Zara, who's busy decorating. Joe's official welcome home dinner is always an all-day party, with his mother up by dawn and extended family appearing by lunch to help set up. This year, people are arriving by 11. Arms laden, eyes beady. Joe has prepared for this by sending Nikki off with Ibrahim to get last-minute supplies. He's getting told off for this by three different aunties when they finally return. Nikki looks surprisingly calm to be facing down a house full of Alkazanis, which means Ibrahim's done a good job. There's a flurry of introductions where everyone makes a lot of noise at Nikki's halting Arabic. Joe's cousins mime swooning behind Nikki's back. Joe rolls his eyes, but he knows he's beaming. Nikki's compulsion to help goes into overdrive, exacerbated by people constantly asking him to lift things or reach tall places. Considering they all have wands, it's a little ridiculous. However, Nikki obediently follows every request, and Joe gives up trying to save him by late afternoon. Instead, he snacks to his heart's content and takes over door duty as friends and neighbors start arriving, stretching the house to max capacity. It's wonderful. Nikki is setting up dinner tables when Joe finally escapes the house. He'd met some new babies that had been born over last season, been teased mercilessly for not catching the snitch in the final, and caught Zara in her room with a neighbor's son. To be fair, they did seem to just be talking, but she'd also threatened to hex him if he told Aisha, which is pretty telling. Joe ducks out the back door and across the patio, only stepping on the colored pavestones as he's done since childhood. There are so many guests that they're putting extra seating on the grass, and Joe walks over to where Nikki's standing by the line of trees, rearranging a table so it's in the shade. Joe can feel everybody's eyes following him. Subtlety is not, perhaps, an Alkazani and Company's strong suit. How are you holding up? He asks, handing Nikki an ice-cold glass of mint tea. Nikki takes it gratefully, their fingers meeting for a second. Joe thinks wistfully about sneaking off, but they'd never get away with it. Good, Nikki says, smiling like he knows what Joe is thinking. I can't remember anyone's names, but I feel useful. You don't have to work for them to like you, Joe says, and Nikki gives him a skeptical look. They just want to meet you, that's all. Nikki says without conviction, and then looks around before stepping closer. And you? Are you having a good time with everyone? Yeah, Joe says, smiling at him. I mean, I did have to escape one uncle, but they're all great, really. They're family. I don't, Nikki says, and looks so lost for a second Joe wants to smooth the expression from his face. I keep expecting something to go wrong. I think, he says quietly, I'm almost more worried that it hasn't yet. He glances at Joe as if Joe will laugh at him. How do you think I'm doing? Nikki, Joe says, and takes Nikki's face in his hands. Nikki makes a startled noise, looking guilty, but leans into Joe's touch, free hands circling Joe's wrist. Joe can almost hear his auntie's losing it from the kitchen window. You're doing fantastically. Everybody thinks you're lovely. And even if they don't, fuck it. I think you're perfect, and that's all that matters. Nikki laughs, pushing Joe's hands away in mock derision. Very egotistical, he says, but he's a little pink. I think I care about your mother's opinion more than yours, if I'm honest. That's fair, Joe says. Oh shit, look busy. Sammy's coming over. Over dinner, people realize that Nikki's guaranteed icebreaker is, unsurprisingly, Quidditch. Every EQL fan in Joe's life descends on him with glee, and even non-Quidditch folks stop by to see Nikki at full force. Joe tends to cap Quidditch talk when he's home, but to Nikki, Quidditch is home, and he doesn't exactly have an off switch for it. Well, none that Joe can use in public, anyway. One cousin discovers that Nikki seems to know the stats on any player she cares to name, and this starts a trivia battle in one corner of the garden, with people quizzing Nikki with increasingly obscure questions and gasping when he gets it right. Nikki looks surprised but pleased, feet on firm ground again. Hey, is it true that Lelievre is returning as a sports analyst? Nadine asks. She's one of Joe's oldest childhood friends. Nikki is currently cradling her six-month-old daughter in his arms. Joe can feel the crowd of onlookers melting at the sight. Or maybe he was just melting enough for all of them combined. It's hard to tell. Nikki says, his eyes on the baby. The breadth of his shoulders makes her seem extra small, but he holds her with steady hands, like he knows what he's doing. Joe wonders where he'd gotten the practice. Yes, I believe so. Surely they won't just stick him behind a desk, Nadine says. He'll be on camera, no? Nikki glances at Joe. He might prefer not to at the beginning, he says. Zara pauses as she walks by and then sidles over to stand next to Nikki. Is this about Booker? She asks casually, a wicked little smile at the corners of her mouth. Oh, please tell me he'll be on broadcast. I've always thought he was very handsome. Joe's eyes nearly bug out of his head as the gathered crowd agrees far too enthusiastically. No, he says, pointing at Zara, and then at Amira when she starts to laugh. No, none of you even joke about that. We're allowed to have opinions, Yusuf, Aisha says, just able to maintain a straight face. We have eyes. Not around my teammates, you don't, Joe mutters. Nikki laughs and then immediately stops when the baby fusses, rocking her gently until she stops. Joe's gotten multiple comments throughout the evening of how different Nikki is to what people had assumed. How sweet, how smart, how unexpected. Joe just smiles and nods. Nikki is everything. As ferocious as he is gentle. As shy as he is competent. As the conversation continues, Nikki looks up and smiles at Joe, a quiet, precious moment amongst the hubbub. The only time on pitch Nikki makes an appearance is when they discuss rivalries over dessert. Nadine's gone to put her daughter to bed, and Joe had quickly claimed her spot, arms slung over the back of Nikki's chair. Okay, controversial opinion given the company, Fethi says, but I have to say, Keane's very good. His accuracy's nearly as good as yours, Nikki, and his swing strength is insane. Nikki glowers on reflex before visibly reining it back. He's effective, he concedes. He's just, Nikki pauses, and Joe can almost hear his brain grinding through all the PR-approved responses he's trained to give. Very good at targeting Joe in order to distract you? Sara suggests, eyebrows raised. Nikki's comfortable enough with her to glare back. Is it a distraction if I give him what he deserves? He asks, and everyone oohs like school children. Joe rests a hand on Nikki's knee under the table and feels him slowly relax back down. Zara gives them both a knowing look. As the sky darkens into evening, their garden lights come to life, warming them all in gold as they float out from the trees, occasionally bumping against the whitewashed walls of their home. Joe and Nikki have escaped the rowdier guests to sit with Sonali and Adam, who have lived two doors down for a decade now. Nikki looks particularly beautiful in the soft light, the shadows from his features like smudges from a loving hand. He has his head propped up on one hand, eyelids low. I've been meaning to ask, Sonali says, when the conversation lulls. Genovese. That wouldn't be the same Genovese as Genovese Consulting, would it? To the untrained eye, Nikki's expression barely changes. To Joe, Nikki's expression shudders like a door slamming, and he feels Nikki go rigid beside him. It is, he says, voice mild but short. Sonali's eyes widen. Oh my gosh, she says, turning to Adam. Honey, weren't you saying? I think a friend's son just got an offer from one of the German offices. Oh, it was so competitive. Oh yeah, Adam says, looking thoughtful. Work's been buzzing about that acquisition Gian Vittorio just pushed through. How are you related? All the sleepiness is drained from Nikki. He sits up, and Joe recognizes his PR face immediately. He's my brother, he says. Adam's eyebrows shoot up. Oh, shit, he says, looking stumped. I didn't know he had siblings. He gives Nikki a teasing smile. You didn't want to take over the business with him? Might have been a bit easier than what you do now. Nikki laughs in a way Joe never wants to hear again. Jean-V was always better at all that, he says, waving a hand. And he was raised to take over for my father. No need for me to. Oh, but your parents must be so proud, Sonali says, and Nikki blinks at her. You've done so well for yourself. Oh, Nikki says, and his mouth twists upwards. I don't think they quite understand hitting things for a living, but thank you. His tone, underlined now with bitterness, sets Joe on edge, and he redirects them, segging smoothly to ask Sonali about her parents instead. Nikki squeezes Joe's hand under the table, quiet and grateful, and Joe squeezes back, chest tight. By the time the last guests are leaving, they've migrated onto the grass. Nikki sits cross-legged in the middle of a thick picnic blanket, a sister on each side. Zara has her head against Nikki's thigh. Amira is leaning her back against Nikki's, eyes closed. Nikki had tried to get up at one point to start cleaning, but Aisha just pointed a finger at him and said, "No," and he hadn't tried again. She's speaking quietly to Nikki when Joe joins them, translating what their grandmother had said when she'd forgotten Nikki couldn't speak fluent Arabic. Joe stretches out and puts his head in the crook of Nikki's legs. Nikki smiles down at him before turning back to Aisha, his hands finding Joe's hair. Joe looks up at him, and then beyond, into the night sky. All the stars he's familiar with blink at him, like they're saying hello. They'd grown up like this, lying in the backyard and staring up at the sky. He remembers how annoying Zara had been about camping outside, and then how much he'd missed it when he left home. He remembers the rare secrets Amira would tell him under the cover of darkness, how Aisha had sat out in the rain with him when he'd first had his heart broken and needed to be dramatic. He can barely believe that Nikki's here with them now, so foreign and yet so much a part of him, that he must be a part of his sister's, too. Zara goes to tickle him from where she's lying, and Joe retaliates until Nikki and Aisha both admonish them at the same time. And Joe hears Amira laugh from behind them. Joe can't stop smiling. When they finally get to bed, Joe comes out of the shower to find Nikki standing by the window with the lights off, a silhouette against the frame. "Hey," Joe says softly, and puts his arms around Nikki, pressing his face against the crook of his neck. They breathe together, and Nikki's fingers find his as they always do. "Did you have a good time?" Nikki says, leaning back against Joe. "I really did. Everyone was lovely. I was worried," he stops, finger squeezing. "I couldn't believe it, but it was lovely." "What couldn't you believe?" Joe asks. Nikki is silent for a long time and then, "Family. So many of them. Just together. Happy." There's an awe in his voice that guts Joe with its sincerity. "I always thought, I knew it was possible. I just didn't." Nikki stops and turns then, because he can no doubt feel the way Joe's arms are tightening around him. "No, Yusuf, it's okay," he says, as if Joe is the one who needs comfort right now. "I'm just saying, they were lovely. You have an amazing family." "They're your family, too," Joe says, and then his heart jolts as he realizes the gravity of his words. Of course he means them. He's just not sure if Nikki is ready to hear it yet. Nikki's eyes are wide in the moonlight, and Joe keeps his gaze, barely breathing. The house is so quiet, Joe imagines he can hear both their hearts hammering. Finally, Nikki takes Joe's face in his hands and kisses him so tenderly that Joe aches with it, hands gripping Nikki's back. "Thank you," Nikki says, so quiet it's barely a breath. "Everything I have is yours," Joe says, "because it's the truth." And they stand like that, intertwined, for a very long time. Much to Joe's chagrin, Nikki has outdone himself. Everyone's clamoring to see more of him, regardless of whether Joe is present or not. He keeps coming home to find Nikki gone, and then has to play round robin with his sisters to figure out where he is. At first, he's concerned Nikki is simply too polite to say no, and is secretly hating the entire experience. But Nikki is an open book to Joe by now, and he keeps coming home, quietly giddy, no matter how tired he is. It no doubt helps that everyone's taking the opportunity to embarrass Joe. "You are such a chubby baby," Nikki says when he returns from their auntie's house, and the dinner table hoots with laughter as Joe groans and tries to stop Miriam from summoning her own photo albums. "Yes, we were surprised a broom would fly with him on it," Aisha says, and she and Nikki share a conspiratorial smile just between the two of them. When they're alone on the swing seat outside, Nikki says, "I think people like me." Joe laughs and says, "You're just realizing that now?" Nikki shakes his head, looking like he does when he wants Joe to read his mind. "No, I mean," he says and takes a breath, "they like me. Not because of Quidditch or business or even because I'm with you, just me." He shrugs, hesitant. "Do you know what I mean?" Joe does. It can be difficult to know who they are outside of Quidditch, considering how young they'd started and their current public profiles. Joe's not sure how Nikki has stayed sane, considering the glaring lack of familial support and only a handful of close friends. Joe has his expansive network to come home to. Nikki has no such luck. He adores Italy as much as the country adores him, but Niccolo Genovese is a goddamn institution there. Elsewhere, Nikki hides by being aggressively boring with press, but he's been the darling of Italian Quidditch and culture from too young. Every generation in Italy feels some sort of connection with him, but that's with Niccolo, and not just Nikki. Joe's not sure if Nikki has really felt that difference until recently. He takes Nikki's hands and presses a kiss to his knuckles. "Of course," he says, and Nikki's face relaxes. "And of course they like you just because. I might as well not even be here." Nikki laughs. Well, I must be a nice change for them after you, he says, and Joe has to kiss him then just to feel his smile. A window opens above them, but Joe is too enamored to stop, until Zara drops a water bomb directly over them, which somehow misses Nikki and completely soaks Joe. As happy as Joe is for Nikki, there are days when he doesn't get to see Nikki until bedtime. And once there, Nikki refuses to do more than kiss. Joe stares at him. Babe, he says, the door is locked, and I've cast so many silencing charms. Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't make us more suspicious at all, Nikki says, rolling over. Your sisters are next door. Good night, Yusuf. Joe mouths, what? At the ceiling, and hears Nikki laugh quietly into his pillow. Bastard. Thankfully, Joe steals Nikki back with travel. Technically, they travel together constantly, but it doesn't count if all they see are hotels and Quidditch pitches. Instead, they go exploring, luxuriating in the lack of schedule. Nikki still has an itinerary, of course, but lets Joe deviate from it as much as he wants. Joe thinks he'd trade all the wonders in the world for the unbridled awe Nikki has for every new thing, and the way his face lights up as he turns to share his excitement. In particular, Nikki loves the wizarding ruins hidden amongst the muggle ones, and Joe's not surprised. Magic can feel markedly different in every part of the world, and especially around ancient sites. The thrum of it is unique and heady. Most of all, they spend time along the coast. It's here that Joe seriously considers whether he'd died early and gone to heaven. Every beach is postcard perfect, and Nikki makes up for lost time in every resort they stay at, in rooms so secluded they feel like the only people on earth. In El Haweria, Joe drifts awake to the sound of waves instead of an alarm, and smiles as he smells coffee and fresh bread. When he finally opens his eyes, he can see Nikki out on the balcony, head tipped back against the sun. Joe's sisters have teased Nikki endlessly about not tanning, but Joe thinks he looks radiant, warm and beautiful and so relaxed. He hasn't bothered to put a shirt on, and Joe's eyes trace the lines of his back, more familiar to him now than his own. He can see the marks he's left on Nikki's skin, heat sparking through him as he remembers each kiss and bite and bruise. They're a lot nicer than the marks Nikki usually carries from the game, and Joe has to get out of bed just to touch him again. Nikki turns when Joe walks out behind him, hair lifting in the sea breeze. He's let it grow out a little from the short cut he keeps all season, and Joe runs his hands through it, arms on Nikki's shoulders. They kiss as their good morning, sweet and filthy all at once. I thought you'd be tired after yesterday, Nikki teases, hands running down Joe's back. Of you? Joe asks, smiling. Never. A few days before they're due to leave, Joe finds his father staring out the kitchen window, dishes forgotten. It's still strange to Joe that he's taller than Ibrahim now. In his mind, his father is still the towering figure he tried to copy as a boy, always calm, always knowing what to say. Now, Joe can see the gray hairs amongst the black, the lines that weren't there last summer. Joe waves his wand to get the dishes cleaning, and Ibrahim turns, looking guilty before realizing it's Joe. Thank you, he says, and then gestures out the window. Come look. Joe joins him and sees a rare sight. Amira talking animatedly, hands waving, books down. Nikki is listening intently from the patio table. As they watch, Nikki makes a comment that has Amira pointing at him excitedly before diving for her notebook. Think she'll finally finish her thesis this year? Joe asks, and Ibrahim laughs. If Nikki helps her do that, he'll replace us all as favorite, he says, and puts an arm around Joe's shoulders, steady and warm. They're quiet for a little while, watching as Zara comes back in from the garden. Instead of interrupting Amira like she usually would, she takes a seat next to Nikki and listens with him, shoulder leaning against his. "Thank you for bringing him home to us," Ibrahim says, and he's never had to say much for Joe to understand exactly what he's saying. "It's been a beautiful summer." "The best," Joe says, and he's so happy he can barely contain it. "It's been the best." Just prior to preseason, Andy offers Niall the captaincy. Offer is the official term. Andy doesn't exactly make suggestions. Niall's first thought is, "No, I'm too young. I'm not good enough." But Andy gives her a piercing look and Niall breathes in, slow and steadying. 5 seasons as the guard's top scorer, 2 championships in 3 years, a locker room of players who already follow her lead. She can do it. "I'd be honored," she says, and Andy sits back, satisfied. Joe, who's been alternate captain for several seasons now, whoops from behind Andy, and Nikki gives her a rare smile. "Good," he says. "I wasn't going to accept the other A without you." "Oh, sure," she says sarcastically, but she's grinning. She knows she can do this. She's also glad they'll both be at her back, brothers in arms in every sense. She slings her arms around them both as they leave the office, and they laugh as she drags them into a near run, too excited to walk. "I want another championship," she says, and Joe whistles. "I want a goddamn dynasty." "Aye, aye, Captain," Joe says, and even though he's smiling, his eyes are as serious as Nikki's. "Whatever you say." Niall's first game as captain is against the fucking Alchemists. After what had happened with Booker, the franchise rivalry between the guard and the Alchemists had tipped into something truly ugly. They'd also swept the Alchemists out of the playoffs last season, but it had cost them. Niall knows both Andy and Copley have been asked to clear the air between the teams, or risk greater punishment for the amount of fouls and bloodshed that happened during games. Even with Quidditch, there is a line between entertaining and not fit for broadcast. Andy had glared at the team and said, "We're going to destroy those motherfuckers by playing an unbeatable game. And if that means avoiding penalties, then fine. But if it doesn't, also fine." Niall knows that as captain, she should lead by example, calm the visceral hatred that permeates the locker room whenever they verse the Alchemists. The older players all exude it, and the younger players follow suit, even those who had never even known Booker. It's grown into part of their lore, and Niall feels it under her own skin every time she sees their stupid blue logo. Intellectually, she knows much of the Alchemists' wrongdoings are from ownership and management, but that sort of rationality tends to fall away when they kick off the ground. There's not exactly much love between the players, either. "Nikki," she says outside their locker room, "I understand how it is, but I need you to be extra careful, okay?" His jaw clenches, and she tips her chin up, keeping his gaze. Before, she would have been hesitant to call him out. Now she has to. "I'm within the rules," he starts, but she shakes her head. "That's borderline, and you know it," she says. "And I know you're protecting us, but the league's cracking down on beaters, and you've also got the A now. The team follows you, and I don't want Chris or any of the others risking it. Okay?" It's a cheap shot, bringing Chris into it, but generally effective. Nikki glares at her, conflict clear on his face. "If Keen," he says, and looks like he wants to spit the taste of that name out of his mouth, "if Keen goes after Joe like he always does, I make no promises." Niall expected as much. Beaters always threaten seekers, but it's become personal, the way Keen guns for Joe and the way Nikki hunts him down for it. Niall knows Andy allows that play because it's good for wins, and fans love the rivalry between the league's top beaters. But it's also costly. The risk of it, the pressure, the absolute nightmare it makes out of Nikki. So far, he plays well from it, but it always feels a hair's breadth away from madness. Niall is not risking that on her watch. Nikki, she says, eyes locked with his. I'm asking you to set a professional example, no matter what. No matter what. Can you do that for me? Nikki takes a deep breath in, a slow exhale out. I'll do my best, he says, face set. She takes it. And your new captain, ladies and gentlemen. Niall mounts her broom, heart in her throat. Niall Freeman! She shoots out of the tunnel, and the stadium rises to meet her, roaring. She laps the stands, saluting, and receives adulation and hatred in equal parts, amplified by thousands of spectators. The guards circle around her, tight-knit, before following her down to the ground. It's game time. Her and Keane meet to shake hands. She ignores how they must look on the stadium projection, him towering above her, so much older and broader and better prepared. His face is impassive, but his grip is not. When Niall turns back to her team, she sees her own resolve reflecting back at her. They know her stance. Keep it clean. Keep it short. Most of all, win. It's brutal. From the moment they kick off, both teams are playing like it's game 7 rather than a regular season opener, the alchemist seeking revenge and the guard rising to meet their fury. The pressure to start her captaincy well grips her head vice-like, and she extends that out, willing the guard to maintain control. They've got first possession of the quaffle. She drops it to Olivia as the alchemist beaters converge, and she's forced to swerve. A second later, Nikki's there, teeth bared, and Keane veers to avoid his bludger before they both dive after it, Niall resuming formation above them. Nikki seems to be honoring his promise to her by focusing on the chasers and having Chris spot Joe instead. Niall catches the quaffle from June and accelerates. The keeper swoops up, and for a second she sees Booker prostrate on his kitchen floor and shoots the quaffle so hard it snaps the keeper's wrist back as it soars through the hoop. They're horribly balanced. The guard takes the lead 50-40, but then have to scramble as the alchemists pull ahead with 70-60, the scales tipping every 10 minutes. Bludger hits echo through the stadium like gunshots, underscoring the crowd's cries at every near miss and goal and foul and penalty. Inevitably, somebody gets hit. It just happens to be Niall as Keane's partner tries to cut her off. She shouts as her left forearm snaps, but the quaffle is in her right, so she rolls with the hit and scores through the lower goal hoop, left arm dangling. It's 110, 100 to the guard. They call a timeout, but she's lucky. It's a clean break, and Celeste's already healing it when the team gathers around her. It's fine, she says, teeth gritted as the bone snaps back into place. We're doing fine. Let's keep it together. She looks at Joe, who's still got his legs over his broom. Just try and end it soon, all right? On it, he says, and they kick back in. 15 minutes later, Joe dives. Nikki is circling the chaser's formation when he sees Joe swerve from across the pitch, dropping at an insane angle after a flash of gold. The air is clear around him, the alchemist seeker nowhere near, and the entire stadium gasps, breath caught. Nikki smiles as Joe reaches out for a sure catch, a beautiful sight even after so long. He feels the beginnings of relief. Nikki doesn't see it, but he hears it. The sound he's heard since he could fly, the crack, crack of a beater's bat hitting dead center. There are two shots in rapid succession, and his broom is accelerating before he registers conscious thought, chasing after the bludgers as they ricochet past him, too fast and too far. There's only one place they're going. Nikki hears himself cry out. The first bludger hits Joe square in the throat. He jerks backwards. just in time for the second bludger to cave directly into the side of his head. Niall sees Joe reach for the snitch, and her heart swells. A split second later, it all goes to shit. Everything happens at once, and yet she sees it all. The worst 1-2 she's ever witnessed. Joe falling, the stadium snapping out of its horror and screaming as he does so. MediWizard scrambling on the ground as Andy sprints toward them, shouting. And then Niall's blown back as Nikki shoots past her. Not to land, but back to where the hits had come from. Keen. Nikki, no! She yells, looking around for, and then realizes the whole team is looking at her because she's the goddamn captain, and fuck. Land and cover, she shouts, pointing to where Joe's grounded, and then gestures at Chris, with me. They split, and Chris tails her as she flies after Nikki, but they're only in time to see Nikki dive for Keen, who was already close to landing. She sees Keen turn and realize Nikki's bearing down on him at full speed, sees his eyes widen. Nikki tackles him. He flies directly into Keen and just doesn't stop, the force of it launching both men off their brooms and onto the ground below. They hit the grass and roll away from each other. And when Nikki comes up off the ground, he's done what every Quidditch player has been drilled not to do. He's drawn his wand. By logic, they should simply not be allowed wands on pitch, but many wizards still feel like they're missing a limb without it, and thus it remains, holstered to the inside of their shin gear. Niall has never seen anyone draw their wand in the modern game, has barely witnessed a duel outside of class, only knows that the penalties for it are some of the league's worst. It stops her from drawing her own, even as Nikki raises his. Nikki's curse is drowned out by the stadium's reaction, but the flash of red is blinding as Niall lands, yelling at him to stop. Keen blocks with his own wand, self-preservation perhaps, but then he's firing back, and Chris has to yank her out of the way. Game officials are sprinting toward them, but before they can get close enough, something drops out of the air and dive bombs them, forcing them to scatter. Niall gapes as Nikki's broom, riderless, does a sharp 360 and aims for the officials again. One of them points their wand at it. No! Chris shouts, kicking off the ground. And Niall can only watch as he shoots past the officials and throws one leg over Nikki's broom, double mounting, until he can forcibly land again. Nikki's broom goes still under him, as if it had not just done the insane. Chris twists around, eyes widening, and shouts, Niall, behind you! She dives out of the way as Keen and Nikki barrel past her, locked in streaks of silver and blue. There's an ugly gash across Nikki's cheek, bleeding furiously, and a growth on Keen's face that's making his jaw twist. Behind her, the game officials finally hit them with disarming spells, ripping both players' wands out of their hands. Keen barely has time to register this before Nikki punches him across the face with his newly empty fist. It's actually a good move. Too many wizards still don't expect it, and Nikki gets another hit in before Keen grabs him, both of them grappling. Keen's bigger, but Nikki is tactical and seemingly devoid of pain, even as Keen claws at the wound on his face. Something is happening with Nikki that Niall feels before she sees. A crackling in the air as Keen gains enough room to throw a punch. He jerks back with a yell, stumbling as Nikki stands firm. Furious, Keen lashes out again and screams as his arm twists back on itself without ever making contact, hand spasming into a claw. He drops to his knees, clutching his wrist, and Nikki advances on him, silent and steady. He's covered in blood now, but underneath it, his face is completely, unnervingly blank. Nikki raises his hands. If there's one thing Wizarding Britain forgets, it's wandless magic. Magic is certainly easiest through a wand, directed, regulated, and if you believe the Brits, more civilized. Having so much centered in Britain means forgetting that even close neighbors have different specialties. Without formal training now, they're much more difficult, but possible. The sheer power of what Nikki is doing, wandless and nonverbal, is utterly terrifying. There is no precedent, no guidelines. And when Niall tries to run forward, she hits something hard enough to be shocked backwards, 100 pins and needles piercing her skin. "Nikki," she says, and the air shudders in front of her, static. "Nikki, listen to me. We need to get to Joe. We need to get to Joe." Nikki turns his head then, and she sees his eyes, the pupils blown out. His mouth forms her name. They stun him. Niall's never seen it happen in real life, but she sees the spell hit him, sees his eyes roll back as he drops like a stone. She runs forward to catch him, barrier gone, and almost buckles under his weight before Chris gets in beside her. They lower him onto the grass, and Chris turns Nikki's head so Niall can press the hem of her uniform against his face, blood running hot under her hands. "Did you know?" she starts, and Chris shakes his head like he's trying to clear it. "No," he says, voice hoarse. "I've never seen. I didn't know." Someone lands behind them. But it's not a Mediwizard, it's Olivia, stumbling as she dismounts, tear tracks clear on her face. "Niall," she says, "Niall, you need to go. You need to go now."